This is a podcast from 720 to go. We're WGN Radio.
The voice is in your head.
News Talk 720 WGN.
The poets, the pundits, the prime ministers.
Never get through Chicago without talking to Milt Rosenberg.
You've just downloaded a podcast that contains a full-length version of Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg.
It's the history of history itself.
Hello, and thank you for downloading a special edition of the Extension 720 Honor Bridge podcast. My name is Zach, and I am the producer for Extension 720. We had quite an interesting night tonight. We had Stanley Kurtz from the National Review and the Ethics and Public Policy Institute on to discuss what he found in the Annenberg Challenge papers at the UIC Library. What follows is the entire two-hour program, and it's also interesting to note that we did invite the Obama campaign to come on with us for the entire full 2 hours, which they declined. So thanks for downloading this edition of the Extension 720 Honor Bridge podcast, and enjoy.
And tonight, a very special guest, Stanley Kurtz, is a writer for, among other publications, the National Review, the Weekly Standard, and is indeed a PhD in anthropology with a degree from Harvard, but he sort of abandoned academic life a while ago to kind of conduct high-level journalism in the public sphere. He is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center based in Washington, also an adjunct fellow of the Hudson Institute, and I read you quite frequently at NRO particularly. And recently you've become interested in what was once a major, heavily funded operation here in Chicago, presuming to improve the quality of public education.
That's right, Milt. There was a foundation in Chicago called the Chicago Annenberg Challenge. And the reason that foundation is so interesting nowadays is because the chairman of the board of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge was Barack Obama. And there was another operative wing of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge called the Collaborative, and Bill Ayers was the co-chair of the Collaborative. So naturally, that body is of interest, both because of this issue so discussed nowadays about the relationship between Ayers and Obama, but also because his time as chairman of the board of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge was really the most important executive experience that Barack Obama has had to date.
This kind of connection between Obama and Ayers is a little confusing because, to quickly review the history of this thing, it was perhaps a year ago or a little bit less that some reporter turned up the fact that when Barack Obama was first announcing his run for the state Senate in Illinois, the sort of launching reception was held at the home of Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, both of them having distinguished themselves early in their careers as members of and founders of the Weathermen, and both of them having been on the FBI 10 Most Wanted list for a while. Indeed, Bernadine Dorn served some time in prison. Bill Ayers did not. And Ayers, of course, was involved in planning terrorist activity and planting bombs in, among other places, the capital of the United States. When the fact that they had sponsored that first meeting launching the state Senate campaign, when that was brought up to Obama, he said, and this is a quote, "He's just a guy I know in the neighborhood, a professor of English." Apparently, he was much more than that. So there's some disingenuousness there, or else some true forgetfulness. Either way, from your close study of the matter, what's the actual history, the actual content of the Obama-Ayers connection?
Well, of course, there's a lot that we don't know that we would like to know, but it's clear, as I said just a moment ago, that the Chicago Annenberg Challenge was, in a sense, a joint project conducted by Barack Obama and Bill Ayers. They weren't the only people involved, but again, Obama headed one wing of this foundation, and the other crucial wing was co-chaired by Ayers, and they seem to have shared an educational philosophy, a certain political interest in education issues in Chicago. And by the way, I would add that in a piece I wrote in the Weekly Standard, I covered their joint interest in the question of juvenile crime. There was even a panel at the University of Chicago organized by Michelle Obama in which Bill Ayers presented his ideas on juvenile crime from a book he'd written on the topic. And there were several characters from the book, real-life characters, who he had speaking. And along with them, there was Barack Obama, who the flyer that advertised the session said was fighting to block legislation that would send more juvenile offenders into adult prison. And this essentially is the same thing that Bill Ayers was arguing in his book. And it's also the case that when the juvenile crime bill that was in dispute at that time came up for debate, the Chicago papers were quoting both Barack Obama and Bernadine Dorn separately, but they were two of the go-to people who were at least seriously questioning, if not flat-out opposing, this bill. So on both the area of education policy and crime policy, it seems as though there has been some kind of political alliance between Bill Ayers and Barack Obama.
Then the more one learns about the Weltanschauung, the worldview, and the political program or intention of Bill Ayers, perhaps the more that helps to illuminate what is really on Barack Obama's mind and or his agenda. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, you know, I don't think we can make a one-to-one correspondence.
They are different men.
They're different people. I wouldn't want to say that everything that one thinks is what the other thinks. Having said that, I think it's fair to say that they had to share certain baseline assumptions to work together in the way that they did work together. And I think the fundamental message that comes out is that rather than being a post-ideological, partisan pragmatist, Barack Obama seems to have a history of being very comfortable working with people who are very far onto the left side of the political spectrum. Whether he shares every jot and tittle of what they think or not, I think he's at home on the far with people from the far left, and he's certainly a lot further to the left than the idea of a postpartisan pragmatist would lead you to believe.
Now, how does this relate to the problem you've had with the University of Illinois at Chicago, or rather with their library, concerning archives representing the work, the achievement, and the close records of the Chicago Edinburgh Challenge?
Well, I've certainly had a problem trying to examine the records, although fortunately the records are open now and I am examining them.
Well, you sort of forced them open, did you, with a little bit of legal pressure?
That's right. But I can't at this moment know for certain what the source of that pressure is. I certainly have some suspicions that there might be political motivations at work. And we might learn more about that, by the way, Milt, because, well, first I'll give some background and then I'll say what might happen soon. When I discovered that the records of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge were housed at the library, Richard J. Daley Library at UIC, I phoned the library, spoke to several librarians. They all assured me that I would have access. We set up an appointment. I was ready to fly to Chicago. And just before I got onto the plane, I received a message from one of the librarians letting me know that the collection had been closed. At that point, I got into a bit of a struggle via email with the librarians, saying I don't understand why I should have been shut out. And they would give a reason. I would shoot down the reason. They would come up with another reason. It didn't really quite add up. And at that point, I became a little bit concerned that perhaps the documents might not be entirely safe. And so I decided I needed to appeal to the public, essentially, to bring scrutiny onto the university and its decision to close the documents as the best way to ensure their safety and to get them open to public access. Now, what was really behind all that? Well, it's hard to say, particularly because we don't know the identity of the donor. But in the course of my correspondence with the librarians there, I was told that the donor had suggested or made an argument, and I'd have to double check the letters, but this is my best recollection, that the donor had said, wait a minute, you UIC Library, you don't have what's a deed of gift, and without that you don't have the legal right to show those documents. Now, since then, a number of legal experts have argued that this is a very weak argument, that actually you don't need a deed of gift to turn over papers of this nature, and that the handing over the papers themselves is the legal transfer of ownership. But it does seem as though the donor may have been setting up a situation, an argument, that would have allowed them to take back the papers under the argument that they hadn't signed the deed, they weren't going to sign the deed, please give them back. So it would be very interesting to know who the donor was, and we might learn something about that soon.
Meanwhile, you're in there at the library. You were there, I gather, yesterday and today, and you've got the rest of this week. They're allowing you to look at these materials. Other news people have come in as well, I gather.
Oh, that's right. The when I finally got there, there were all sorts of news media there. AP was there. The New York Times was there. I'm not sure of every organization, but there
were. And are there researchers in that library right now, today and yesterday, pursuing the details of this history the same as you are?
Yes and no. They are there, but today there was a real fall off in the number of people. There was one sort of dogged reporter who was still going through as many things.
And you're remaining a dogged reporter as well, and will be there for the rest of the week, I gather.
Oh, yes. And yes, absolutely.
We'll hear more about what you're finding, and we'll hear more about your other journalistic excursions into the history of the Obama campaign and the rise of this singular figure in American politics when we return right after these words. And on News Talk 720 WGN, we return to Extension 720 and to my guest of the evening, Stanley Kurtz, Senior Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Adjunct Fellow at the Hudson Institute, and regular contributor to important journals, the National Review, the Weekly Standard. Indeed, one might fairly say those are conservative journals, and you write from a consistent and examined conservative base.
I think that's very
ideational and, or ideological base.
That's a fair point.
And I do not hide that. Some may wonder why we don't have a representative of the Obama campaign here to counter you and to argue with you. And, in fact, we called them and invited them. We only learned yesterday that we had you available for this program. So instantly, quite early today, we called them, that is my producer, Zach Christensen, did, and invited them to come on. They refused. They were... But that didn't end it, apparently, because I will now tell you and tell our listeners something that's happened, which in my over 30 years of experience with this program has never happened before. We have a firestorm of angry protest conveyed via telephone and via email. Zach is sitting in the studio right now, in the control room right now, handling angry callers who are denouncing us for having you on the program. And I'll read just one email. I am disgusted that WGN is giving 2 hours to a vicious, racist crackpot. I didn't know that PhDs from Harvard turn out that way very often. Kurtz is tied to that vile traitor Bill Kristol, spelled K-R-Y-S-T-O-L. Why are you providing a platform to this character assassin? Do you have a regulator like that FCC where I can file a complaint about the lack of balance? Since my understanding is there is no opportunity for the Obama campaign to present their correct version of events. Disgraceful. Please provide the address for a formal complaint. Well, I assure that listener that the Obama campaign was invited to participate. Beyond that, how do you react to this sort of thing?
Well, Milt...
And are you surprised?
Well, I am surprised. I'm not surprised in the sense that I heard from a producer just before I came down that some of this was happening. So I was prepared for at least the last hour or two, but I was certainly surprised when I heard it, I have to say. Because these sorts of debates have been going on in the blogosphere and in the press for some time. And I have to tell you, Milt, that as distinguished a radio personality as you are, one of the things that excited me most about coming here was not just appearing on the Milt Rosenberg Show, but having any sort of actual business in Chicago's Tribune Tower, which is such a famous landmark building. So I was very...
May I add for a moment that you spent some 5 years at the University of Chicago in a postdoctoral operation?
That's correct. I have been at the University of Chicago.
But we did not know each other there.
No, not at all. And I've lived in Chicago, but I've never been in the Tribune Tower, and I've never had actual business here. So when I came in, I couldn't help but notice, having heard earlier from the producer about all of these people trying to prevent my appearance, I noticed that... all over the inside of the lobby were quotes about freedom of the press,
and them were chosen and put up by Colonel McCormick, who ran this place and built this building and was the Chicago Tribune for some 40 years.
So I took down just a few of those quotes before one of your people came out and fetched me. I'll just read these three short ones that I copied down. I'm embarrassed to say that I don't really know who Erskine is, who is the author of this particular quote. The liberty of opinion keeps governments themselves in due subjection to their duties. Another one of those quotes etched in the stone there was, "Our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost." That's Thomas Jefferson. And a quote from Associate Justice George Sutherland, "A free press stands as one of the great interpreters between the government and the people. To allow it to be fettered is to fetter ourselves."
Since I am somewhat startled by this firestorm that has erupted tonight, I've asked our producer, Zach Christensen, to come in for a moment. Since you made the call to the Obama campaign today, tell us just what transpired.
Well, we called the Obama campaign. We scheduled Stanley late last night. What was it, about 8 o'clock last night? We knew if he was going to have time available. So we called the Obama campaign sometime this afternoon, around noon, noon or 1 o'clock, and said that we were going to be having Stanley on, said that we were going to be discussing the newly opened files at UIC, and that we would love to have somebody from the Obama campaign to come on as well. We're going to be doing it from 9 to 11, 2 hours. You know, be my guest. Please bring somebody on.
Who did you talk to, in fact?
It was a spokesman whose name, I believe, is Ben LeBolt, or something to that effect.
In their communications.
In their communications office, their press office. So, you know, I did offer, you know, to have somebody come on for the full 2 hours with us to discuss whatever Stanley says, to kind of give a balanced version, which they declined. So,
well, how did they decline? What did they say?
They demanded to know who the station manager was here, who they called. Apparently, I'm assuming they called. I have not spoken with our station manager yet. And then after that, the phone was hung up on me. So there wasn't much conversation after that. So
apparently that didn't end it, though, for them, since this firestorm of protest by email and by phone call must have been stirred up by some general communication.
Yes, absolutely. I think an email sent out from the Obama campaign.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear from any of those who are calling in protest, and we will certainly let some of them speak. I'd love to hear from them whether they received such an email. I think that would be a simple and decent obligation to meet. And let's go on with this conversation. So now, what have you been finding so far as you've been going through these archives?
Well, Milt, yesterday I concentrated on the issue of the relationship, if any, between Obama and Bill Ayers. Today I focused on the question of why this foundation seems to have failed in its chief task, which was to improve public education in the city of Chicago.
A word about where the money came from and how much money that was.
Well, the seed money, so to speak, it was a lot of seeds, almost $50 million came from the National Annenberg Foundation. I believe it was in 1993 when Ambassador Walter Annenberg was invited to the White House by President Clinton to announce this very generous gift of, I think it was about, I'm a little fuzzy on the amounts at this moment, I think it was about $500 million to be given out in chunks to several cities, which would have to apply for the money. And then the grant, which in Chicago's case was about $50 million, was to receive matching funds from local philanthropists and businessmen. So in Chicago, as soon as Bill Ayers heard this announcement of the original gift.
He was then already established as a professor of education at the University of Illinois, Chicago.
That's right. And he contacted a couple friends and associates of his. They put together a proposal, and they won the approximately $50 million. And that really is the origin of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge. Let me just add, I'm sorry, Mel, but
yes, please.
They did get matching funds up to at least a total then of $110 million. They got at least $60 million in matching. So we're talking about $110 million. I've seen different counts even higher, but we're talking about at least $110 million that was spent without positive effect.
And their operations begin in 1995, is that right?
Yes, 1995.
And they bring Barack Obama in as chairman of the board directly. He's the first chairman.
Yes, he was the first chairman. The exact circumstances under which Obama was made chairman remain uncertain. I think there's an excellent case to be made, and I'm seeing increasing evidence that gives us reason to believe that Bill Ayers was at some level involved in the decision to bring in Barack Obama, and I can talk about that, but we don't know that for an absolute fact. I think it's a question worth asking Senator Obama as to how exactly he came to be the chairman of the board. But what we do know more certainly is that, as I told you before, it was already public knowledge before these archives were open that Bill Ayers was the co-chair of one wing of the foundation called the Collaborative, and Barack Obama was chairman of the board. But some very interesting documents were there indicating that Bill Ayers was present at many actual board meetings with Barack Obama, that Bill Ayers, his role is somewhat ambiguous in the documents. He, at one point, he's called an ex officio. He and Ann Hallett, who is the other head of the Collaborative, seem to be considered ex officio members of the board. They're not exactly board members, and yet they're able to sit in and do sit in on board meetings. So this brings it across. We already knew that essentially Obama and Ayers would have had to have had a working relationship just because they headed the two wings of the foundation. But here we see Bill Ayers actually present at board meetings, working directly with Barack Obama. So clearly the notion that he was just a guy who lives in the neighborhood, it really doesn't seem to hold water.
Well, I'd love to hear just what they spent the money on and what was achieved through the grants. They did use all of the more than $100 million, didn't they?
Just about all of that money was dispersed. And according to...
I'll ask you to hold off on that now for a moment. That's a tease as we pause for an update on the news. Then let's get your information on that directly after the update on the news from Jim Gutis. And we return to our special guest of the evening, Stanley Kurtz, who's got me more phone action and email action than I've seen in a long, long time. This is, of course, News Talk 720 WGN Radio, and this is Extension 720. I was asking you about what you've, in fact, found about the projects that the Annenberg operation here in Chicago funded and what came of those investments.
Right, Milt. Today I was comparing the files of the educational projects that received money from the Chicago Annenberg Challenge with the files of some of the projects that were turned down. And I can summarize it for you. I also brought some documents I could read little bits from as well. But why don't I tell you the bottom line first, which is that the projects that received the funding, that had their applications viewed favorably, focused on, well, I'll just give you some fairly concrete examples. One of them, in fact, I think it might be better to just read little bits if you don't mind.
Please do.
If you don't mind. Here's an example. This project received money. It's called the South Shore African Village Collaborative. So here's a little notice. The South Shore African Village Collaborative will celebrate the African American holiday of Juneteenth. Juneteenth is the commemoration of the Emancipation Proclamation. And so this group, the South Shore African Village Collaborative, was recently born out of a $200,000 grant awarded by the Annenberg Foundation. And a little later down in the article, they say, "What a celebration. Negro Texans celebrated Juneteenth instead of the 4th of July as their Independence Day," reported Texan Mary McNeil, mother of attorney Ken McNeil, someone involved in this. Now, I'm not saying that these folks are saying we shouldn't celebrate the 4th of July, but on the other hand, I'm not sure exactly what they do believe. I don't think there's anything wrong with celebrating Juneteenth or the Emancipation Proclamation. But when I did some of my research into Reverend Wright and his congregation, there were people there who really did feel that the 4th of July was not their holiday and that Juneteenth was their holiday.
But now here, the Chicago Annenberg Challenge was basically supposed to be dealing with the improvement of public education. What education grants did they make as such?
This was an education grant to this group.
And this but it wasn't group, a school.
Right, because the Chicago Annenberg Challenge funneled its grants to what it called external partners. Oh. Schools would have to join up with activist organizations of various kinds.
I see.
And so this was one of the organizations that was...
Okay, but that was down in Texas. And
No. This was Chicago.
Oh, was Chicago.
They
Fine.
Were just giving some background to... The point is... this organization, like some of the others, was focused on ethnic identity. That was one theme. Then there you have...
Well, what effect did they have directly within the school system? Because our school system has been floundering. There was a time when William Bennett, when he served as Secretary of Education, who announced to the country that the worst school system in all the country was that of Chicago.
Right. Well, the evaluations run both by the Annenberg Challenge itself and by external evaluators concluded that there was no positive effect, that essentially the foundation failed to improve the Chicago public schools. So what I've been looking at is the educational philosophies of the groups that were funded as opposed to the ones that weren't.
And what did you find?
The people that were funded, like the example I just gave you, were focused on ethnic identity. Another one was very focused on bilingual education, strong advocate of bilingual education. And then Bill Ayer's own organization, the Small Schools Network, or the Small Schools, I can't remember the third term, got a lot of funding, which, by the way, is highly problematic because Ayers himself was a leader of the foundation, and that's another issue we can talk about. But his group, for example, had a peace school, a school that taught peace and nonviolent forms of conflict resolution. So those are some of the themes of the folks that got grants, whereas some of the people that had their grants turned down, for example, was the Chicago Algebra Project. And a quote from this is, our approach is to focus on one and only one item, increasing student achievement. That one was turned down. And then there was another group. Let's see if I can get the name of this one. The District 5 Math Science Initiative. That was rejected. And this one was trying to target student populations, predominantly Hispanic, with many students still in the process of learning English as a second language. All of the schools in this group that we're partnering with have made math science instructional improvement one of the school's top priorities. So here you have one group focused on increasing math competence. Another is trying to get Hispanic students who are beginning to learn English up to speed in math and science. Those were turned down. And what I would call the more ideological schools were funded. And I think that may have an awful lot to do with why the Chicago Annenberg Challenge failed to improve public education.
We are about to pause for another quick round of commercials. I talked about the special firestorm of email and phone calls that we've been receiving tonight, and my voicing the thought that maybe this was due to some message from a central source. We've since discovered the central source. I have in front of me right now on my screen, Zach dug this up, something from the Obama Action Wire. And I think I'm going to ask Zach to come back into the studio to read this to us, to talk for, again, just a minute or two about the action that's been taken against this program this night. The first time in my experience in over 30 years of doing this program, which has always been and is to this moment, I trust, an oasis in the desert of perhaps media excess. We try to run a dignified, thoughtful, intelligent program. As I said, we invited the Obama campaign to participate in this program. They chose not to, instead hung up on us after getting the name of the program manager. So I think at last I'm in the big time. You brought me there, for which I should be thankful, Stanley Kurtz. We pause for a round of commercial messages and then directly back. And we return to the air on News Talk 720 WGN. And I've had to call our producer in again. I don't mind calling him in. He's been on the program on occasion for brief episodes. But you've done some further detective work, I suppose, trying to trace the source of the firestorm that we're receiving tonight by email and by telephone. And what have you found?
Well, it's coming from two places. One, apparently the Obama campaign mailed their entire media list about calling Stanley Kurtz, saying that Stanley Kurtz is smearing Barack Obama. There was something just posted on the Politico by Ben Smith saying just as much. And then there's a forum on the Obama campaign website asking people to report your call to WGN, and it says, call into the Extension 720 show with Milt Rosenberg tonight, August 27th, between 9 and 11 p.m., and they give our phone number. And then they want you to report back to them on, you know, how the call went. There are talking points here, of which the talking points they give are basically the boilerplate email that we're getting.
Such as?
William Ayers was involved with the Weather Underground when Barack Obama was 8 years old, and Barack has routinely condemned their actions. Last night on Fox News, Kurtz tried to radicalize an education reform program in Chicago called the Annenberg Challenge. The challenge was funded by Republican Walter Annenberg, introduced by Mayor Daley and Republican Governor Jim Edgar, and one of its initiatives was even praised by John McCain. And then it goes on, Kurtz claimed on Fox News that William Ayers recruited Obama to the Annenberg Challenge, a flat-out lie. Ayers did not serve on the board of the challenge, and he had nothing to do with Barack's recruitment. Those are the talking points.
And what else do they tell the recipients?
Tips for making your call. Be honest, but be civil, which the callers have been civil. I appreciate it.
That's good.
Be persistent. It may take a few attempts to get through to the show. Just keep trying. Your call is important. Then use the talking points above to help you speak confidently and concisely. So, mm-hmm. And then there's a form to report back on.
The new politics? Now, you're a political aficionado or whatever, so stay with us for just a moment as well, together with Stanley. Is this new in American presidential politics, or is this the game as it has been played, but now updated by virtue of digital and electronic resources?
Milt, I honestly don't feel I know enough about American history to reliably answer that, but I would like to speak to those talking points.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I did not say last night of a certainty.
Who were you with last night, by the way?
Greta Van Susteren.
On
the convention coverage, her hour, yeah. Sort of coinciding mm-hmm. with the convention coverage. It was late at night. And I did not say that it was a certainty. In fact, I agreed with Greta when she said that we don't have 100% certainty on any of this material. I do think there's evidence that makes it a perfectly reasonable question to ask.
Which particular question?
The question of how Barack Obama did, in fact, become the chairman of the board and whether Bill Ayers was in some way involved with that. And I think there is evidence pointing in that direction, but it's not definitive. I didn't say it was definitive. We've covered it again tonight, and I was very careful not to say.
Well, apparently, though, Ayers organized the proposal, which got the money, which set up the whole operation, which required a board of directors. So, therefore, there's an Ayers connection, whether he officially served on the board or not.
Well, and we have documents here. Let me just flip to one of these documents where, I mean, the talking point said that Bill Ayers was not a member of the board. Well, okay, here's a document that lists Bill Ayers as an ex officio member of the board. That's the point. And these documents have a lot of ambiguity about the role of Bill Ayers on the board. I mean, sometimes there's a list of typewritten names and addresses of everyone on the board, and then in handwriting underneath, Bill Ayers' name and address is there.
Mm-hmm.
And this also goes for Ann Hallett, because they're both the head of the collaborative, and yet they clearly had a presence on the board. Even if they weren't full members, they had a right to be there, and their status is ambiguous, but clearly at some meetings, they were present. I mean, that we have here, this has all been reported by the mainstream media, I believe AP has reported this. I mean, here's an agenda from the March 15th, 1995 meeting of the board. The first item, welcome and introductions, Barack Obama and Patricia A. Graham. And the second item, briefing, William Ayers. So according to this document, they were present at the same meeting. As I said, according to this other document, Bill Ayers was an ex officio member of the board. These are the sort of things I've been reporting, and I don't see how you can call them smears. They're right here in the document.
The program is taking a turn somewhat different from what I originally planned, if only by virtue of what has been stirred up tonight. But this in itself is quite interesting about the way we do politics now, or at least the way some people are doing politics now. And I'm, frankly, as the rather stodgy, superannuated old professor that I am, who happens to do a talk show at night, I'm rather stunned by the rapidity of this whole process, but that's, of course, a consequence of the digital revolution. Thus, that's all preface to my saying that I have from Ben Smith, again, Zach has called this to my attention, he's writing for Politico, mm-hmm. a major resource mm-hmm. On the Internet, and I must read just a bit of this. He's writing about us even as we're continuing to talk
well,
and do
hi,
this
Ben.
Program. and he says, headline, Obama camp blasts National Review writer as, quote, slimy character assassin. Barack Obama's campaign hasn't advertised this a great deal this week, but the campaign's Action Wire, in quotes, has been waging large-scale campaigns against critics. That includes tens of thousands of emails to television stations running Harold Simon's Bill Ayers ad and to their advertisers, including a list of major automobile and telecommunications companies. And tonight, the campaign launched a more specific campaign, an effort to disrupt the appearance by a writer for National Review, Stanley Kurtz, on a Chicago radio program. Kurtz has been writing about Obama's relationship with Bill Ayers and has suggested that papers housed at the University of Illinois at Chicago would reveal new details of that relationship. The campaign emailed Chicago supporters who had signed up for the Obama Action Wire with detailed instructions, including the station's telephone number and the show's extension, as well as a research file on Kurtz, which seems to prove that he's a conservative, which is not in dispute. The file cites a couple of his more controversial pieces, notably his much-maligned claim that same-sex unions have undermined marriage in Scandinavia, a totally different interest of yours, and I remember reading that article over a year ago, wasn't it? And this goes on to give the full detail. So here we are being reported on, even as we are talking, and all of that in consequence of our having made a phone call inviting the Obama campaign to provide a spokesperson for this very program. And instead of doing that, they have gone into this action. This is part of, this reflects their resolve announced a while ago to, quote, not be swift-voted or something.
Well,
to have strong, quick reaction operation for any criticism of their candidate.
Well, at what point does that reaction shade over into stifling reasonable debate and free inquiry? I mean, it is kind of frightening, but obviously I have a selfish interest in saying that, but it seems to me that the principle of free speech is pretty clear here. Essentially, I'm reading from documents here. I think I've been pretty measured in what I've been saying. I've tried to leave room for many different possibilities. I can't help but feel that this is an effort to silence me illegitimately, but I suppose that's best for others to judge.
It sure has that ring to my ears, though, as I say, I'm a little bit out of my depth, or at least out of my practice routines. This is not the way this program usually operates, but it is fascinating. Yet, at the center of all of this is a very interesting, a rather, and surely an attractive public presence, whom we've come to know only recently, Barack Obama. He appeared once on this program, before he even went to the state Senate, when his first book had just appeared. And I thought him a very graceful, interesting guy with a rather impressive speaking manner, but I was not necessarily much impressed by the quality of his thought. And I focused on the biographical aspects of his book. Since then, we've learned a great deal more about him, but perhaps not all that we can learn. And I know that quite apart from this one operation that you're involved in now in Chicago at the library of the University of Illinois, Chicago, that you've looked into other aspects of his career, and I've read some of your stuff only recently, literally in the last day or two. I should have read it earlier. You had one article called Stealth Senator. Do I have the title right?
I think it's Senator Stealth.
Or Senator Stealth. Talk about that just a bit. We're coming up to a news break in about 3 minutes, but let's hear something about that.
Well, Milt, Barack Obama was a community organizer very famously in something called the Developing Communities Project, which is part of a larger network of community organizers called the Gamaliel Foundation. So I wanted to know more about what the belief system, what the ideology of the Gamaliel Foundation was. And so I basically just ordered and read a book by the fellow who heads what's called the National Clergy Caucus of the Gamaliel Foundation, the group of where the leaders of various congregations in this network get training in how to be community organizers. And by the way, Obama himself was a teacher for the Gamaliel Foundation, although he may have taught before this book was published. But this book embodies long-held views.
Who was he teaching? What was he teaching?
He was teaching other community organizers.
To do what?
To organize. It's a mysterious profession, and I can go into that. But the core point is this. There are several core points, but one of them is that if you read this book that carries the core view of the Gamaliel Foundation, it is remarkably like Reverend Jeremiah Wright. It really is a form of liberation theology with a very strongly anti-American tilt to it. So when you see this, you see that Reverend Wright was not some sort of anomaly, but the core ideology and theology of the Gamaliel Foundation, which Barack Obama is very closely tied to, is very close to Reverend Wright's.
Let me say a magical name with just 1 minute before we pause. We'll be coming back, of course, and we'll continue with this. Saul Alinsky, is that relevant to our discussion?
Totally relevant, because the Gamaliel Foundation carries on Alinsky's views.
Most of our listeners have never heard the name, probably. Who was he?
Saul Alinsky was the original, virtually invented the community organizer profession.
Here in Chicago,
very much so. And Saul Alinsky was a very clever fellow because not only did he want to achieve political change, but he was very tactically sharp. And he knew that it wouldn't work very well, his tactics, if the radicalism was shown too obviously and too clearly. And so another thing I did in this article was to draw on a book by a professor who had done field work with the Gamaliel Foundation and other community organizers. She's very sympathetic to them. And she essentially argues that their community organizers are well-practiced at keeping the full depth of their leftist views away from view of the people they're organizing.
Well, how leftist are their views? Indeed, I pose this again as a sort of a tease question. We're about to pause. But let's talk a little bit about just what kinds of programs and what kinds of intentions and what kinds of revisionism with regard to the way we live in this country and the way we've organized our public life and our institutions. What the Gamaliel Foundation, and for that matter, what the Acorn Foundation, with which Barack Obama has been closely involved, what they actually represent ideologically and in terms of political aspirations and plans. We return to Stanley Kurtz right after a full update on the news from Paula Cooper. And on Extension 720 tonight, our very special guest is Stanley Kurtz, who turns out to be a rather controversial guest. Though I find what you have to say measured, balanced, thoughtful. You go at these things the way a well-trained researcher would. You rather remind me of... I rather recognize that you are a trained anthropologist. And probably when you did your research notes doing anthropological research, they were just as measured and careful, indeed fact-based, as you aspire to be in this investigation. We will be going to the phones, but not until about 10:30, I think, or at least until 10:20. Right now, I want to get back to what we were talking about before. By their organizations shall ye partly know them, though I am not all, I'm more than the organizations I may have belonged to. Still, what do you find in the history of this fellow who is so well commended as a man of considerable dignity and rationality and value in our public life?
Well, Mill, let me mention, going back to that Senator Stealth article, some material from that article. But first, let me make clear that I am not saying that Barack Obama necessarily and certainly read the book I'm going to talk about now. This book was published in about 2001, I believe, and Obama was... did his key organizing before then and was a teacher for the Gamaliel Foundation before then. But again, this book embodies the views of the foundation, and we know that the book is approved by Greg Galuzzo, who was a mentor of Barack Obama. So it's hard to believe that Obama doesn't know something about this ideology. And the book I'm talking about, and people can get it for themselves and read it for themselves. They don't have to take my word for it. I would urge them to get the book called Doing Justice, Congregations and Community Organizing by Dennis Jacobsen, J-A-C-O-B-S-E-N. And he's the pastor of Incarnation Lutheran Church in Milwaukee and director of the Gamaliel National Clergy Caucus. And so in that book, if you want, I'll just read a couple paragraphs from the article.
Sure.
Because at this point, I want to make sure to... not to stray too much from facts that have been checked. So in Jacobson's conception, America is a sinful and fallen nation whose pervasive classism, racism, and militarism authentic Christians must constantly resist. Drawing on the Book of Revelation, Jacobson exhorts, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. Come out of her, my people, so that you do not take part in her sins." The United States, Jacobson maintains, employs nationalism, propaganda, racism, bogus civil religion, and class enmity to bolster its entrenched and oppressive corporate system. Authentic Christians forced to live in such a nation can come out of Babylon, says Jacobson, only by entering into a perpetual state of internal exile.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more. I won't bore you by reading the whole thing, but you'll see that the texture of the language is slightly different than Reverend Wright's, but the substance and to some degree even the intensity is remarkably similar to Reverend Wright. And again, we know that this book has been approved of and sponsored, in a sense, by Greg Galuzzo, who is the most important figure in the Gamaliel Foundation and who was a mentor of Barack Obama. So again, while it doesn't necessarily mean that Barack Obama shares every single one of these views, once again, we see a situation where Barack Obama seems to be comfortable working with people who are about as far onto the left end of the spectrum as you can get. And so there's clearly a pattern here.
You know, as I look at some of the email that I'm receiving, one point that they're making is there's an extra angle to the evil plot that you're pulling on us, that you're doing this on the night of, what is it, the second or third night of the Democratic Convention. And sure, if you invited representatives of the Obama campaign on, they couldn't come on this night. They're too busy doing other things. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true at all. Their national headquarters is right here down the street, and they've got lots of people working there in their communications department. Obviously, if they have time to send out these emails and to stir up this firestorm, they would have had time to walk down the street only about one quarter of a mile and pop into the studio to join you for the full 2 hours.
Well, Milt, I'll say something about that. You know, when I did this, I did an earlier piece for the Weekly Standard called Barack Obama's Lost Years. I did some library work. It took me about 2 months to work that up into an article. Now, I wouldn't have taken 2 months on this, but if I had gotten into that library at UIC when I first wanted to, I would have had to deal with a massive amount of material, assimilate it. It would have taken me some weeks to write anything up. It was only because I was blocked and then asked the public to bring pressure that has created this timing. And the university opened the library up to me and to others this Tuesday of this week. And so I flew in to be here for that. And then media people started asking me to talk because the story of the closing of the library had become big. So really the entire schedule was driven by this controversy over the closing of the library. And in the ordinary course of things, it would have taken me much longer to work up anything I found in the library into a considered piece.
You know, one thought does occur to me, if I could be argumentative with you just
sure.
a bit. Whatever you find about what Barack Obama was associated, what was believed by some of the people he was associated with earlier in his career, responsibility tends to mature somebody and tends to transform you, tends to make you more thoughtful of where you've come from and what you want to represent and what you want to do with the rest of your more important life, more important than it was before, because now your decisions will influence the lives of, literally, if you're in the presidency, billions or maybe all the world. Therefore, one might well grant that though he's got this background with people who are of the Ayers variety, though very few of them would have been bomb throwers the way Ayers was or wanted to be, that was then and now is now.
Well, that's a good point. Here's what I would say to that. Again, in one of these, I'm sorry to keep alluding to all these articles, but that's where I've tried to do the research and to justify what I have to say. In the article called Barack Obama's Lost Years, I looked not at what his associates were doing so much as what he himself was doing as a state senator. What positions did he take in his columns that he wrote for the Hyde Park Herald, and his legislative activities? And those positions were redistributionist. You asked what can we call his policy? Redistributionist.
What does that mean?
That means that in order to further the goal of equality, I would call it equality of result, the idea is to tax and redistribute that taxation especially into poverty programs, but into all sorts of government programs. Barack Obama is sort of a classic big government liberal. And these foundations, if you just sweep aside their radical ideology, let's say that you decide that it's blather of a certain sort, but when it comes down to concretely what they're doing, it's various programs of economic redistribution, and also there's a heavy dose of race consciousness there, affirmative action and set-asides for construction and all of that. And Barack Obama still upholds all that.
I should tell our listeners, even those who are trying to reach us in a state of anger or condemnation, that on the program blog for this program, which you get to by just entering miltzfile.com, miltzfile.com, you'll find a number of articles by Stanley Kurtz, which have appeared recently and which you can print out and read for yourself at your leisure. They will perhaps fill out the argument or the analysis that has been offered tonight. And right now, we pause once again for the usual reasons. And on News Talk 720 WGN Radio, we return to Stanley Kurtz, and it's time to go to the phone calls, 591-7200, though you're probably going to find if you try to reach us, because you yourself want to, without having been instructed to do so, that you'll hit the busy signal. But do, by all means, try if you want to get in there to voice your own original thought. And here is the first caller. Good evening. Hello, are you there? Hello, hello, hello. Well, there you are. This is a caller who's been trying desperately to reach us, and now she does not respond. Here on a long distance line is someone else that whose work I've been reading. Good evening, sir.
Hi, how are you?
This is Steve Diamond, right?
Yes.
Where are you calling from, California someplace?
Yes, Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I'm afraid the line is very poor, but please
okay,
go
I'll
ahead.
Speak up. Okay.
No, it's very staticky. Steve, I'm going to suggest that you hang up. We're going to call you back instantly, all right?
Yes.
I've got a very bad line.
Back. Great, okay.
We'll be right back to you. And I'll ask Zach to call him again as we try to go to another caller. And let me try this one. Hello, you're on the air. Are you there? Hello, hello. What is it? Why don't they respond? Well, I'll try yet another. Hello, are you there? Well, there's something wrong with this phone system. I don't understand. They're all trying to call us, and nobody's coming on when I hit the phones. So the phone number is 591-7200. This is a night that will live, if not in infamy, at least in memory. I truly don't understand what's going on. But that's part of the wonderful adventure of talk radio. I've learned only tonight, after 30 years, how adventurous it can be, in fact. Let me try yet another on 591-7200. Good evening. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's good. What can we do for you, ma'am?
I'm a supporter of Barack Obama. I just wanted to provide my opinion on WGN providing Stanley Kurtz with airtime.
Well, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that, of course, Mr. Kurtz has the right to state his opinions, but I think it is the social responsibility of WGN to also provide someone to counteract those opinions.
And did you hear what our producer, Zach Christensen, reported earlier in the program?
I did not. I just tuned in.
Well, there you are, ma'am. Let me say it again, because some others may have tuned in late. We only arranged for Stanley to come on last night, because he only came to town yesterday. Today we called the Obama campaign, the national headquarters, just down the street on Michigan Avenue, and Zach talked to somebody in their communications department, a man named, I have it here, but I can't find it at the moment, Ben LaVolt, and offered to have him or anyone else they wanted to supply come on the program for 15 minutes or for the full 2 hours, whatever they wanted, and he was told no, and he was asked the name of the program manager, and then Mr. LaVolt hung up on him. So we made the offer and made it in good faith. Does that placate you in any degree?
Not really, I'm sorry to say.
Why not?
I think one phone call was made, yes, but
we should have made 10.
Yeah.
This was an empowered person within their communications department. This was somebody with responsibility.
Doesn't make it right. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we got your view. Thank you very much for the call. And let's take another if we can. No, I guess they're not prepared yet. They're still trying to reach Diamond back in California. Our number is 591-7200, and I would be happy to take another call if I can. I'm going to just go with whatever one I'm told to. Thank you, sir. That thank you is to Zach. And you are on the air. Good evening. Hello, are you there?
Yes. Are you? You need to stop providing Kurtz with airtime.
Why, ma'am?
Because this is not fair. It's a smear merchant, and you know it's totally against what we believe in as Americans.
Well, I don't quite follow your thinking. You want to explain that line of thought to me?
We just want it to stop. It's not fair. It's just a blatant attack against Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got your view. Do you think you are doing a blatant attack against Barack Obama?
I certainly think I'm criticizing Barack Obama, but I'm trying to do it based on legitimate research and facts and arguments that can be rebutted. It would be nice if someone would go over these articles we've been talking about and put out a thoughtful critique. And I could perhaps respond to the critique if I felt that they raised legitimate issues. That's what it's all about, debating back and forth. What can I say?
I think I need to say here, and I will say it quite directly, and I trust that somebody at the Obama campaign is listening, since they've been very invested in the fact that we're doing this tonight, that they would have the opportunity to come on this program on some other date, since they chose not to come on tonight, and to respond as they will. Right now, again, we give the phone number 591-7200, and I'm looking for another phone line to go to, and that depends very much upon my friends in the booth. And apparently there's some confusion there. I don't know where I am exactly, Zach. I wish you would give me a number. Here we are for the next call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I just was curious as to how it's fair that you would notify the Obama campaign the day that this man comes on the air to slander him, and you think that you're going to get somebody on the air when they're running a convention in Denver right now. I mean, it's a huge production to put on an entire.
Well, they're running a convention in Denver, but the national headquarters is in Chicago.
But all these people are working very hard on putting this, you know, positive message out during the convention right now. You can't expect for somebody to just drop everything, come on your show to rebuke something that's been.
Tell me what are your own thoughts in response to what you've heard tonight?
I just think that it's absolutely irrational that somebody is given a platform to say things that have been proven factually inaccurate.
How have they been proven factually inaccurate?
Well, for one, Kurtz tried to radicalize an education reform program that was, were praised by McCain himself. Like, let's talk about that, you know? Let's bring that up.
All right. That's a point. Let's get a response to it.
Absolutely. The Obama campaign has noted that McCain has praised the Annenberg program, that the National Annenberg Foundation was not, even if it might have been somewhat left-leaning, was not terribly radical. And I responded to that argument in a blog post a couple of days ago, and I said, actually, in a sense, the story of modern American philanthropy is the story of moderate or conservative donors having their programs captured by much more radical beneficiaries, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Now, thanks to that caller, and let's now go to Steve Diamond, whom we've got back on the line. Can you hear me now, Steve?
Yes, Milt. How are you?
A much better line. Please go ahead.
Good. How are you?
Fine.
And how can I help?
Well, I gather that you've been writing something and putting it up on your blog even this very night, critical of what we're doing. Explain that to me.
Yes, because I initially had not heard back about our proposal to have a show on Friday, and I understand you had Stanley in Chicago perfectly naturally. You'd want to get him on the show this evening, and I'm glad you did because he's been doing some very interesting work, and it was highly inappropriate of the University of Illinois to deny him access to these records.
Let me interrupt for a moment, Stanley, for you to simply explain what your involvement is and who you are, for that matter. I know, but our listeners don't, many of them.
I'm a political scientist and law professor, and I've been doing research for a number of months on the heir's relationship with Barack Obama. My concern comes from a position of the Democratic left. I come out of the labor movement and a variety of other left-wing activities over the years, and I'm very concerned that someone with the authoritarian instincts of a Bill Ayers would have a relationship with a potential future president.
How can you call yourself a person of the left and disapprove of Bill Ayers? Isn't he of the ultimate left?
No, he's not a leftist. He's a bureaucrat. He's a power-hungry guy who is more interested in regimes like those of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela than he is of genuinely democratic, progressive politics.
He has been down in Venezuela giving speeches, in one of which he lauded Hugo Chavez and endorsed what he called the Bolivarian Revolution.
That's
right. And denounced capitalism.
That's right. Well, we could get into a discussion of capitalism if you want, but the Bolivarian Revolution has nothing to do, in my view, with a genuine left-oriented society or a democratic society. It's an authoritarian populist regime, and the fact that Ayres and other figures in the some wings of the progressive Sir Obama movement support it, I think undermines their ability to shape a genuinely progressive future for this country.
Milt is motioning to me to comment. I mean, I think Steve's work has been great. I probably don't agree with everything that Steve believes, but I guess the fact that Steve can write what I think are some very powerful things about this issue, and that I can write some things, and that we can think that there is some merit
from the left and the right,
from the left and the right, and that there's something that can be judged by a reasonable person from different points of view, shows that you can have a reasonable, logical argument. And
I should say, I think it's very unfortunate that people are using words that come from the McCarthy period, words like smear and guilt by association. You would think that someone like David Axelrod, the son of members of the Communist Party, would be particularly sensitive to the use of this kind of left-wing version of McCarthyism.
Are you maligning David? I didn't know that he was
Axelrod
a red diaper baby, is what you're suggesting.
Well, it's not a malignant. It's public information.
I missed that.
Yeah, and Mike Klonsky, who was ran the Small Schools Workshop, still does, and received hundreds of thousands of dollars from Obama and Ayres through the Annenberg Challenge, and is also a red diaper baby, and founded a Maoist organization, has used similar kinds of reactions to my work and to the work of conservatives about the Ayres connection. And we're not arguing, either Stanley or myself, as far as I can tell, that the Ayres connection is one of association. It's one of a close political alliance. The Annenberg Challenge was an effort to resist Mayor Daley's effort to recentralize control over the Chicago school system, take power away from the local school councils that Ayres and Obama and others had worked hard to establish in the late 1980s.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us on short notice, and we will be in touch again about further programming, though not for this Friday, I fear. I very much appreciate your contribution tonight. We go to the newsroom for a scheduled update on the news and to Paula Cooper. And we'll go directly back to the phones for your calls to Stanley Kurtz. And here is the next. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Rosenberg. I'd like to thank you and Dr. Kurtz for believing in the First Amendment and giving us this opportunity to have access to this information, which I think we can all decide for ourselves as to the possible validity of it. It certainly, I think, confirms what I have known about the Alinskyites, having first met up with them back in the 70s and 80s when they were trying to conduct their peace and justice organizing in my church, only because I think we had a rather gullible pastor who couldn't see through them. But I think this is these calls that you've been receiving from the Obama camp are just part of the Alinsky M.O., the modus operandi of the end justifies the means, and forget, don't confuse us with the facts, and that kind of mentality. But I'd like to ask both of you, first of all, how a publicly funded, taxpayer-funded university could have put on their faculty somebody like Bill Ayres in the first place?
I don't know the answer.
I don't know. I at this point, I feel it would be a mistake to speculate about a matter that I have so little direct knowledge of. So I'll tell you, just to take you off from that comment, I do think that in this case, the association is not unimportant. It matters what Bill Ayres did, and it matters that a respectable university would hire someone with that background, which I find very disturbing, especially the fact that he's unrepentant. I don't begrudge people saying any of that, but I have been focused more on what Bill Ayres was doing after all that, which I think is, in a way, almost as revealing or maybe more revealing. Again, Bill Ayres was working from a self-consciously radical, hard-left view on issues like education and juvenile crime, and it's in that way that he was working with Barack Obama, and there was this broader pattern of Barack Obama working with people who were sharply on to the left, and the point I keep trying to drive home is not so much who he's associating with, although, again, I do think that's important. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to say that this image of the post-partisan pragmatist is, I don't think it's a reliable image. I think that Barack Obama is pretty far onto the left, and I think his pragmatism is not the true heart of Barack Obama. And I think if people think they're electing Barack Obama because he's moderate in his heart of hearts, then I think they're making a mistake. And I'm particularly concerned what will happen if Obama, who I think leans pretty far to the left, is elected with a Democratic Congress, because then I think the checks that he had to deal with when he was in the minority for most of his time in the Illinois State Senate will be gone. And I think we'll see a very sharply redistributionist program and all of the other things from the left. So, again, I think the association from the past and what happened in the 60s is very important, but I've been stressing a later period, actually.
Yes, I certainly share your views. In fact, I just heard about a week ago from a former FBI agent that if Senator Obama had been applying for a position with the FBI, he would not have been able to obtain any security clearance.
Well, I don't know about that. That doesn't sound quite right to
ma'am,
me.
Ma'am, I fear we must,
of his past,
we must
his
move
past
rather
record.
Quickly. Lots of other people are waiting. Thank you, for the call. And quickly to another. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Yes, I'm not going to go through the bullet points. I'm an Obama supporter. But I do want to let America, apparently a lot more listeners are listening tonight who don't usually listen to your show. I do. And I like your show. I do want to give some historical perspective, though, about your using Bill Ayers as a topic of your shows.
Mm-hmm.
I very distinctly remember a week after 9/11, you had a prosecutor from Ohio on,
mm-hmm.
who was, and you can use your own words in describing it, Milt, if you'd like, but I'd be happy to describe it, too, because it's very fresh on my mind.
Is this the fellow who was a Northwestern Law School graduate who
Indeed
was leading a campaign to get Bernadine Dorn off the faculty at Northwestern Law?
No, as I recalled it, that may have been part of what he wanted to do, but he also was very interested in having the Northwestern alums of the law school stop donating money. And as
yes,
you recall,
that was the same fellow, yeah.
And as you recall, it was...
But I had somebody from Northwestern Law also on the program arguing
you
with me.
You had a dean who wasn't, as I recall it, and I'd love this, I would love it if you put this on your archive, because I think mm-hmm. it's very valid. The Northwestern dean who was speaking was not commenting. You didn't have anybody in support of Bernadine on, and I was I was one of two calls who voiced my opinion that as much as the previous contributor said he didn't think it was guilt by association, it sure felt like that to me at that immediate point.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the point that they
well, you remember that program better than I do. I fear.
Oh, I certainly
it
remember.
Was a long time ago.
And
you do what you can to be accurate, or rather to be fair and fair and balanced, which is a phrase that they use on another network. But and in that case, the obvious thing to do is have somebody from Northwestern Law come on. If he didn't perform in a way that suited all of your desires, that's his fault, not mine.
No, I suited my desires by calling in. That's what
you made a corrective contribution. I'd
like to just add one thing.
All right, I have to go quickly, please.
This is truly how I feel about this. A person can be judged on what they did during the 60s, but it's a different type of judgment in the modern times. And, of course, Barack Obama was a very young man, as mm-hmm. I was during that time. I think it's ridiculous to try to associate it at all. And if we're going to do this, then we're going to have to start thinking about the guilty, quote-unquote, terrorists of the military who did horrible things to citizensry, to people in Vietnam. And then we're going to have to start thinking about how we should judge them and associate them in modern day society.
Well, you've made that point clearly.
Now, the proper thing to do is not to do that.
Please, accept my, not authority at least, accept my responsibility here.
Put it on the archive.
I've got to move rather quickly, so let's hear some response to what you've just said.
I'd be happy to hear it.
From Stanley Kurtz.
Sure, I'm just going to repeat a point in another form that I made to the earlier caller. I do think the 60s are important, but I have been focusing on the 90s. And the 90s, I think, are inarguably highly relevant to current decisions about Barack Obama. It's the relationship between Barack Obama and many other Chicago political and Illinois political figures and his own actions in the legislature, including his relationships and alliances with Ayers, in the 90s that I think tells the tale about where he's really coming from politically.
And with that, we'll go to another caller, 591-7200. And we go to, let me see, to Hilda in Chicago, I believe. Good evening.
Yes, hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I was just wondering why you, as a reputable station, I thought you were, would give airtime to someone like this gentleman who is being dishonest and attempting to play the terrorism card with the audience.
What dishonesty do you discern in Stanley Kurtz?
Everything is dishonest. He's trying to distort Obama's reputation, and any intelligent person
would
read that through the line.
Dishonest means you tell lies. What particular lie has he told?
He's telling all the lies.
Okay, you be more specific.
As far as a long time ago, Senator Obama cleared up this connection with Ayers. I'm surprised that it's even being talked about on your station.
Well, how did he clear it up? What are you
I'm not going into specifics because you know it already, and your attempt is just one of the things that the Republicans do. They use smear tactics.
I see.
You don't have a reputable opponent in McCain, and so you go and attempt to blemish this wonderful man's character, and it's just a sad thing that you do. And, his claims are completely false. And they've been disproved in numerous press accounts. So, I'm just calling to say that it's not even in reference to him because, I dismiss him. But as the station, WGN, I thought you had more class and you were more savvy than that. And that's all that I have to say about it. Thank you.
You've said it well, and I appreciate the call. Do you want to make a response to that?
Not really. I think that caller speaks for herself in more ways than one.
And we speak for we let our advertisers speak for themselves. This is about the moment for that. And after this break, we return to Stanley Kurtz and to your calls to him on 591-7200. And on extension 720, which you're hearing on News Talk 720 WGN Radio, we return directly to the phones and to this caller. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Milt.
Yes, sir.
Stanley, you were dismissed by that last caller, that woman, who will never take the time to read your article, Barack Obama's Lost Years, or Context, you say, where you go into an exposition of the theology of Reverend Jeremiah Wright, which was quite an expose. And I trust in the magazines that these were printed in with the editors Crystal, Barnes, and Lowry, that they don't print or publish editorials or articles that aren't grounded in fact and clearly researched. They were great articles, and I recommend that all your critics read those articles. You did a wonderful job.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I would like to see people address what I wrote in those articles. The caller makes exactly the point that I think needs to be made. I think you could take a reasoned objection. You could make reasoned objections to what I wrote in those articles, but so far I haven't seen a lot in the way of such reasoned objections.
Our thanks to the caller and to another caller, Mike in Chicago. Good evening.
Great. Thanks, Mel.
Yes, sir.
Just a couple of points I want to make. First of all, I think Stanley is a bit of a kind of divisive person in the United States of America as we sit here. There's too much of this going on. I mean, I'm just looking at an article he wrote looks like August 22nd, where I'll just quote, "The University of Chicago invented a new job for which it hired Michelle Obama. In that job, Michelle would be able to channel University of Chicago students into the radical anti-American groups that she and her husband worked with and whose ideology has received far too little scrutiny." I mean, it's just ridiculous that you gave this gentleman 2 hours of airtime to, and for Milt, sorry, but for you to come on and say you gave the Obama campaign a chance to rebut this, calling them today in the middle of their, I would like you to do this when the Republican convention is on, and call the McCain camp on the day they nominate John McCain and whoever his vice president will be. And I'm guessing you're going to get the same response, that they will not be able to provide anybody either. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely, I thought you were a much more intelligent man than you are to be able to justify that you gave the Obama camp a fair chance to come on your program to dispute that a lot of what is being said here. I mean, what Stanley Kurtz is simply saying is he's tying Barack Obama, who Barack Obama is the one running for president, not William Ayers, he's tying him back to this weathermen group in the 1960s when Barack Obama was 8 years old. He's now going after Michelle Obama and her educational background.
Now let's get some response. You've made a point. Let's get a... discussed.
That blog post that the caller refers to referred a couple of times to this Senator Stealth article where I document this anti-American ideology of the Gamaliel Foundation that I referred to in that post. And so once again, we're brought back to the earlier point. If you want to disagree with me, read that article and offer... Okay.
I have read the article. I guess I'm...
No, not the one that you read on here, but Senator Stealth, the long, detailed, factually grounded article that I referred to.
Oh, I'll read that article after I read the other articles about your position on gay marriage, how it's destroyed Scandinavia. You have really intrigued. You have really piqued my interest in yourself here. I've heard a lot about you, and I've heard, you know, people coming on calling you a nut job and everything else. It wasn't until I actually got on, and I would encourage all of your listeners at WGN not only to take their concerns with WGN allowing you on the air, but to actually read some of your posts and have them believe for themselves what you actually stand for. You are the most un-American person. I am just amazed that Milt Rosenberg and WGN allowed you airtime. Nobody else
sir,
has. Have you been on CNN, Fox News? No, of course not.
Why don't you hold on for a minute? You're getting a little carried away. And let's get some response.
Well, I think, again, I think the caller speaks for himself. I think people should make their own judgments. They're hearing me. They're hearing the callers. I think the audience should...
You were on Fox News just last night.
Oh, yes, I was on Fox News yesterday, yes.
Yeah. Well, this is, I say, a new experience for me. But I'm not important in this process. Though I must respond once again, with at least with regard to the matter of the convention being on. Sure, it's on. But they got lots of people over there. And the guy that talked to us this morning is in their communications department. He was there, not in Denver. And we only arranged to do this program last night. We didn't know you were going to be in town.
Are they saying I can't go on radio as long as the Democratic convention is on?
Perhaps something like that, yeah. Or that, at any rate, we should not have presumed to try to get somebody from the Obama headquarters during the convention time. But I
that's what it amounts to. It amounts to saying I cannot speak during the Democratic convention.
Or something. We go back to the phones. And here's the next call. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Milt. I want to commend you for presenting these
Thanks,
programs.
I need that.
Yes. For presenting these programs, exposing the true facts about Obama and the fraud that he and his supporters are trying to perpetrate upon the American public.
Well, let me interrupt you for a minute. We're not specializing in such programs. We've had discussions here in which Obama supporters have had a great deal to say.
I realize
and,
that.
This is not an anti-Obama program.
As you might gather, I'm a conservative, and I believe that the fathers of our country framed the U.S. Constitution not with a vision that eventually the country would sink into a communistic, a socialistic society. And these callers who are lambasting you a smack of fascism, they only want one viewpoint, their viewpoint. They don't want to hear anything else that they perceive as negative about their candidate, when in fact these are facts, and they are true facts. And I commend you, and I want you wholeheartedly to continue with your programming and to not be intimidated by these people who want to silence the voices of the true voice of the real American people who want this country to stay strong and not fall into the hands of a Marxist socialist.
Well, I thank you, ma'am, for the call. And what comes to my mind is that wonderful scene, or recurring scene, in the film version of Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls, where Akim Tamirov, as the gypsy leader of the guerrilla group, keeps saying, "I don't provoke." He says it, though it's supposed to be a Spaniard, he speaks with his Russian accent. "I don't provoke." So I will try not to be provoked. 591-7200, and you are next on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. Hi. I guess, you know, I got the email from the Obama campaign, and
did
I'm a
you?
Supporter, and I tuned in to listen to this fellow was saying.
Kurtz.
Sorry, Kampar, a little nervous. And, you know, I was wondering, where is the there? You know, I read the article in the Sun-Times and the Tribune this morning about the Annenberg papers being released. He says he hasn't been able to find any smoking gun, quote-unquote, really, except, of course, that Obama has relationships with heirs, which we already knew. Obama is a liberal, which we already knew. He was associated with Gamaliel. I looked them up. I'd never heard of them. Their issues, as they list on their website, are comprehensive immigration reform, health care for all, jobs now, opportunity, housing. I mean, and, of course, the book that he quotes, you know, he's not sure that Obama ever read or had anything to do with. So, and Obama's already disavowed Reverend Wright and that whole ilk. So, I mean, I just don't hear any there. I don't hear any smoking gun. I just hear a lot of vague insinuations.
Well, I think there's a lot of there. I think Barack Obama saying this fellow is just a guy who lives in my neighborhood is quite contradictory to what we already publicly knew about the Chicago Annenberg Challenge and what we're finding out now. And I don't think there's any doubt that the Gamaliel Foundation as a whole is far more to the left than people have realized, and I don't think there's been press scrutiny. One of the things I'm doing is inviting further press scrutiny of these community organizer groups. Take, for example, not just that book I quoted, but the ethnographic study by a very sympathetic professor of the Gamaliel Foundation, and read what she has to say and what I say about it in that article. These are not things that people have known up to now. The press has not been curious about these matters, and I think we're seeing what happens when people do get curious about these matters.
Well, but the Gamaliel is there to assist local community leaders. That's what Obama did, okay? Now,
sure.
I mean, isn't that a reasonable place for him to go to get trained? I don't know.
What I'm saying is
15 years ago.
Their ideology is very far to the left, and Barack Obama has been portraying himself as a pragmatist, a non-ideological person, and yet he seems to work closely with organizations that are very ideological and very far to the left.
And, sir, with that, I fear we have to say goodnight because time is just about out. Well, we are reflections on this evening.
I guess it'll take some time to take it all in. I don't want to rely over much on the authority of the magazines that I publish in. I want to rely on what I say in my articles. But on the other hand, if someone who has published in some of the main conservative publications is not allowed to go on a radio show or be allowed to participate in public conversation saying the same things he said in these magazines, it effectively silences the entire conservative side of debate in the United States. I mean, I don't want to be that grandiose, but...
I might end with one line from an email I have in front of me. I think we've had more email tonight than ever before in my experience. This fellow says, "I'm laughing at the comments being made by several of your callers and distressed by the suppression of thought and discourse. Obama aside, will UIC bear any consequences for what is clearly an attempt to thwart genuine inquiry?" Well, they've yielded to the protest, and I think they'll bear no further consequences. And Stanley, I thank you for joining us tonight. Must have been rather a strain for you as well.
Thanks so much for having me, Milt.
The preceding was a presentation of 720 to Go.
And
the people working therein.
For over three decades, Milt Rosenberg has played live on Extension 720, weeknights at 9.
News Talk 720. WGN.
You can subscribe to Milt Rosenberg's monthly list of guests and topics by going to WGNradio.com.